Right on, brother.
All right, guys, our guest today is the founder of School of Man. It's an organization that builds real men through raw and real vulnerability. He's author of the book School of Man, host of the podcast The Alpha Talk. We'll talk about this. He's someone who's experienced it all, coming from the brink of divorce, battled substance abuse, lost his way a little bit, but he describes it as somewhere along the way he experienced freedom. And this guy's also set the world burpee record in 24 hours. We'll talk about that. Cole Rogers, welcome to the show, my man. Thanks for slowing down with us.
Yeah, Mitch. Like I said in our pregame, this is actually fortuitous timing for me. And every time I do one of these podcasts, I always want to express gratitude and want to express gratitude to you. And I'm a big person on that. That's a part of slowing down to even express. Not also what you're thankful. It's easy to express what you're thankful for on the easy stuff, but when you get a knock at the door, or you know, everybody has a plan until they're punched in the mouth, right? And it requires you to slow down. Be grateful for those opportunities so you fully understand how powerful the present is. And that's what's happened to me multitude of times in my life. I'm a big believer in meditation. I meditate every single day. It was one of those things that really was a turning point for me. I almost died in a Mexican bathroom. It's kind of a funny story, honestly, but I was so just a little bit about me and my backstory. Mm-hmm. And yeah. As men, we're all born fighters. I don't care who you are. You don't have to go. That battlefield is right outside your door. It actually starts in between your ears. Mm-hmm. And that is our war path since we are born. Right. So I was born a fighter, just like you were born a fighter. I almost died when I was a child due to meningitis. And, you know, as you stair step through life, you go through these trials, tribulations, these crucible moments. And getting to the Mexican bathroom story, the one thing I've always been known for is I can go 1,000 miles per hour. Right. I was on the unhealthy side. So like on my podcast, you know, one of my missions is to convert an unhealthy alpha to a healthy alpha. And being an alpha, there's no bad connotation with it, because you do come with superpowers, right? Labels can honestly hurt you too. But I was always that guy that could run through a wall. Give me a mission. When's the next mission? I wouldn't slow down to celebrate my victory. And that's a big thing for men that are in kind of in that high performing arena, that we're always launching businesses. Maybe they're a sales guy, maybe they're a CEO, entrepreneur, it doesn't matter who you are. Mm-hmm. And really what happened was my core business was scaling really fast. And when myself and Ashley got married, and that was when I was 27, I'm 38 years young now, I brought in a host of bad habits. And one of those habits, one of those several addictions. And I think that when we think of the term addiction, in particular for men, you're going to go to alcoholism, of course, drugs, porn. But a lot of men are addicted to validation. And even more men in my shoes are addicted to stress and addicted to, honestly, the self-sabotage loop, because we like to feel the dopamine hits on the ride down and back up, and right in those endorphins on the victories on the way up, right? And I'm no different than that man. I'm a perfectly flawed man, plain and simple. And it's taken me a long time to honestly say that, Mitch, and say it with love, because the number one step in helping yourself as a man, 10x anything in your life, right? You can go follow any influencer on Instagram. You can follow all the major celebrities that are out there, from Gary Vee, whoever it is that's telling you what to do, how to build a business, etc. But if you don't know yourself and you don't love yourself and you don't understand yourself, there's no way any of that stuff's going to matter. And some of the most successful people that I work with in the School of Man, from men that are worth $5 billion to grocery baggers, it's the men that truly chase fulfillment, that achieve everything that they want. Mm-hmm. And then some. And the point I'm trying to make is, the pivotal point in my life, there's been many moments, these crucible moments, moments that are heavily laden with meaning, was it's in a Mexican restaurant, takes place in a Mexican restaurant in Springfield, Missouri, where I have a large client up there that I'm a consultant for in my core business. And up to that point, I was the guy that had to answer the emails as fast as possible. In fact, I benchmarked myself, and I think a lot of us do professionally in this world, that if you send the most emails, you answer the most emails, that's equivalent to being the hardest worker.
Right.
Doesn't mean that you're executing on the right things, but means you're the hardest worker. And really what I was addicted to was stress. I loved it. I loved it more than anything. And behind the scenes, I was so addicted to performance and growth that, you know, Adderall was a big deal with us in college. Take it to cram, to study, to ace the test, and turn it into partying. And that just led into my career, and then led into my marriage that my wife didn't have any clue about. There was a point in time, Mitch, and I was that guy that I could hide in plain sight. I was the captain of the basketball team, the captain of the baseball team.
Right.
I was executive in my fraternity, number one producer in my first job out of college, right? Launching a business, you know, so on surface, we're very good, and social media is very good of applying these filters. We were applying filters long before Instagram and Facebook and all of them were giving us those opportunities. Think about the family that walks in the church squeaky clean looking and then walks out, and they fought the entire way there and fought the entire way home. And that's really where I was in my life. I could not pass my own mirror test, but I went out and I just benchmarked myself like every man does and has been taught, no matter where you are in this world and this planet. Athletics, women, and money, right? Those are the three things. If I can check those things off, if I'm in shape and I look good in the mirror, if I'm making money and I got some power and I got a beautiful wife or girl that I'm chasing, all right, or a significant other, then I'm good, man. I'm good. But I really wasn't. So that night in the Mexican bathroom, everything that I would eat, little bits of food, like anything spicy, you know, Mexican food or something that my wife would cook maybe at the house, like pot roast, it would get lodged in my chest.
Right.
Yeah. So it would get lodged, and I would have to go to the bathroom and make myself throw up, and there would be foam that would come from it. Well, the first shot, you know, really the first time I was like, oh man, I just ate too fast. Cause since a kid, I was told, Cole, slow down. The food's not going to run away from you. Yeah. So slow down. Exactly. My mom would tell me that, Cole, like, you can't get up from the table until we're all finished. And that night I was entertaining my client. They wanted to go to this restaurant. That's where they love to go. That's where they got their rehearsal dinner, brought their family. And I was like, and I told myself all the way there, I said, man, just do yourself a favor and chew your food. Don't drink any beer. I totally went against it.
Right.
I take the first bite of my, I think it was fajitas or burrito, and I wasn't necessarily eating healthy, sustainable, organic foods at the time. And I was eating chips and salsa, and they're talking and laughing, and it just got like quiet around me. And water started rolling from my eyes. I knew what was happening. They had no clue.
Wow.
I wash it down with some beer, I thought, but it's still lodged. I was like, okay, slow everything down, go to the bathroom. So I go to the bathroom, I beat on the door, and it's just this one hole in the wall bathroom. Someone comes out, they had just used it. I go in, lock the door, and literally, Mitch, I attempted to throw up multiple times, and it wouldn't come up. I was like, oh my God. I started sweating profusely. I was wearing a tie, and at that time, the tie was just undone. And then okay, it didn't happen in the sink. So I went over to the toilet. Like, someone just used the bathroom. I was about to die in this Mexican bathroom. And it felt like an hour. I'm sure it was only a handful of minutes. I finally get it to come up.
Yeah.
And it was just foam and just the food. And I just lay there, man, sweating profusely on this concrete floor. And I hear beats on the door like someone was needing to use the restroom. So I go out, clean myself up, and people at the table looked at me like, what in the world just happened?
Right.
So I'm driving back to my hotel, and I'm thinking to myself, like, this is not a way to live. Like, I'm going to end up dying in a hotel room at the age of 31, 32. And I'm a newly minted father. I watched my daughter flatline on the table. My wife had to have emergency surgery. And all I could think about was going to our the little casinos in our hands, my phone, and answering my emails and producing and making money, which is important to put food on the table because that's how I filtered everything, right? Like I do all that, I'll be okay. But what ended up happening is that my wife and I, we met on eHarmony when eHarmony was kind of like taboo in the world of social dating. And no, I wouldn't say it's taboo, but I was afraid to even tell my boys. Like I met my wife on eHarmony, and that tells you about the network I was in at that time, because I couldn't pick her up like a regular dude, right? Completely insecure. But so we met on eHarmony, got married a year later. I blew out my Achilles twice, had to have surgery. You know, so that stripped that athlete mask right off, exposed me there. We had a kid, Ava Madison. We had a kid. We had a beautiful daughter, Ava Madison. She flatlined. She's fine now. Thought that would wake me up.
Yeah.
12 months later, we have another one, Landon. And so we went through this 5-6 year period where we're ships passing in the night and had zero intimacy, zero relationship. And there is no manual that comes with marriage, and there is no manual that comes with fatherhood. You're going off of what you've learned, learned patterns. And here I am emulating what I saw from my father, who I love, who had a open heart surgery at the age of 51, because I would watch him just basically kill himself at his work. And so after that, and I didn't even tell my wife, Ashley, after that, that's really what was one of those crucible moments, because we as men are, we're going to learn from pain one way or the other. And it's what you do with it and how you distill that down, which is what becomes so important, because a lot of us are walking around with all these great insights, but unless you put action behind it or anything, it's worthless.
Right.
And so that's where I went out on my journey. And, you know, coming from the South in America, you get these kind of worldviews, especially within your little networks that you're in, and like, oh man, slowing down, or not even slowing down, it's like meditation. That's for hippies. You start, you never even tried it, right? You start creating all this false narratives and, and realities. And that's where my journey is, you know, started. And like, so meditation and movement for me and quietness is so key. And I can always tell, like I was telling you before we got started, like, man, this is fortuitous timing for me, because the universe is saying, hey, bro, slow down. Even had my, one of my business partners say, hey, man, you need to slow down. And I don't burn out. Like, that's one of my, you know, it's, I just need to slow down and take an opportunity to reconnect, because I can come at you with some dragon energy. And that's typically when I'm not centered at the end of the day. So that's kind of my story when it comes to as a man of slowing down. And I create better things when I slow down, when I, when I take an opportunity to connect and connect with myself and breathe and meditate and journal. I do it all day long. That's my thing. And when I started going through my rebirth process, that's what honestly saved my life, to be totally candid.
Man, crazy. What a crazy, crazy story. And I guess this was, it's been, you're, how old are you? You're 30, late 30s?
38.
38. This was under 10 years ago that this, that you were at, you know, the depths of this. It's amazing. You, I've got a lot of questions. I guess,
fire away, man.
First of all, the, in that Mexican restaurant bathroom, what was actually, like, I'm more curious than anything. What was the physical, symptom that was happening where it was getting stuck in your, in your throat?
So foam was coming out. So it was basically severe acid reflux. And yeah. So at one point in time, I was like, I'm just going to go get surgery, because in America, that's kind of the thing. Like, what pill can we throw at it? Or what quick surgery can we do? What quick fix can we do? And so it would be literally foam. It's all it would be. And it would be cutting off my airway. Like, I couldn't breathe.
Of deal.
So it felt like someone was choking you, or you're choking on food at the end of the day. So, and then I just, especially in that bathroom, I was sweating profusely. It was hot as hell in there, but I was basically what felt like wrestling an alligator.
Oh, dude. Wow.
That's
crazy. Crazy. See, I have so much written down here from your story, but, you said a few things, and I think, you know, you're obviously someone who by nature is, you're driven, Like mm-hmm. you, that doesn't sound like it's ever really been an issue in terms of like putting pedal to the metal, working. Maybe you were focusing it on the wrong areas. Like you say at work, it was like, how many emails can I send out? How many phone calls can I make today? And so this is a topic that I've always found very interesting and a tough fine line, which is like how to bet, because drive is good, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a big, I think, stereotype against the world of slowing down, whether it's meditating or just mindfulness and that kind of space, is that, well, how do you get anything done when you're in that space? Mm-hmm. And it's true that these two things do kind of contradict themselves in some way. And I know I found it difficult trying to catch myself at times in periods of like, oh shit, Mitch, your pedal's too much to the metal right now. Let's slow down. Let's reconnect. Let's recenter. I'm curious your experience of, you said right now you're in a space of like trying to reconnect and slow down a little bit. Is it getting better? Like, is it easier to catch yourself now and reconnect?
Yeah.
I guess, what is that? Take us through what that experience feels like.
Yeah. So self-awareness, like anything else, is a muscle. And in order to grow a muscle, you have to tear the muscle, and you repeatedly do that. And that's where confidence comes in. So where I am now, from an emotional intelligence, from a social intelligence, you know, from those quadrants in our lives, spiritual intelligence, whatever you want to say, basically self-awareness.
Right.
Is that I'm so in tune with when I know I am. We all have a dark side. I don't care who you are, and I don't mean it to be in a negative connotation, but for me, I gave you a little snippet of my kind of my life. I mean, when you are geared or wired like me, mm-hmm. and you are, when you couldn't find Adderall, or when you're doing coke off of the counter while your wife's pregnant with your son, and then you go out all night just to come back in to act like nothing ever happened. I have a dark side. So like taking that energy and putting it into the good areas of your life to where you can produce those results every one of us desire. That is a journey in and of itself. Some never master it. Some never understand it. Some of it, let them consume them. You know, I'm a sports person. Like, think about it in this context, like Jordan, I'm a Michael Jordan. That's my era from the Bulls.
Yeah.
When he got on the court, man, everything just got really, really quiet. Now he gambled, he partied, he womanized, you know, he had this over because the pressure, he had to release it in some way, and it not necessarily was the healthiest way. And so the point I'm trying to make there is where I am now is I've learned to use this ball of energy that God gave me.
Yeah.
And now, because over the work I've done for 10, 11 years, and that's where a lot of people get lost, is because they want to microwave their success. They want to microwave their results. And the only way I know to get to where you are and consistently grow is through the 1% better every day mindset. And so when I started on that path after the Mexican restaurant, I graduated from Navy SEAL Hell Week as a civilian. I was one of 9 out of 50 to do that. And my teammate died at my feet. So that woke me up.
Wow.
Yep. And a Christian radio show asked me to come on and do my story. I did it. My wife had been in therapy for a few years. I'm meditating. I'm journaling. I'm doing all the things to be like, oh my goodness, I'm chasing fulfillment now, and I'm going to achieve what I want through fulfillment. And that's the truth. But she had never heard what I told on the radio show. So there's cognitive dissonance there, you know, and so I had to answer that, because my major addiction to her was lying. No one else. I would never lie to Mitch or anybody else, but it was her, because it was shame. So once again, life taught me another lesson to slow down and to, you know, everything that you want, you desire, it will be there. But all this stuff we all want to accumulate, or I wouldn't say all, that society tries to tell us to accumulate, what does that really matter if you're not even leaving a legacy of any form? And so to that point, pain has been my greatest teacher, and I'm not a quitter. And so when I've got hit with that, and I was suffering for self-sabotage, which majority of men do, it's hard for them to admit that, but self-sabotage leads to self-doubt. I basically had to go into rediscovery mode again. And that's where I started really learning myself and knowing thyself, because you can't, like I've said it before, there's no way you get what you want out of life as a man if you do not love who you are and you don't know who you are. So know thyself is the greatest gift you can give. So this year, I mean, I've got goals just like anybody else, and I don't talk about it. You got to be about it. But my son gets diagnosed as autistic in January. Mm. We put our dog down. Mm. My father-in-law is here with us now, has bladder cancer. He's getting his bladder removed, prostate removed. My mother has cancer. Mm. And you start catching yourself in these themes, these repetitive themes and loops that you've seen from time and time again. You've just learned how to cut the loop off before you head into it. So I know that's a long way around your question, and hopefully it makes sense, but it's a process. You got to trust the process. You got to keep going back, just as if you're an Olympic athlete.
Yeah. You definitely answered the question. I think, I love what you said about, you know, obviously knowing yourself. The first step is knowing yourself.
Yeah.
And learning to love yourself. And it's like, yeah, with that dark energy, I think you're right. Like there's a, you know, people call it a lot of different things, the shadow, whatever, shadow
work. Shadow side. Yeah.
But what I've found is that for a long time, I ran away from that, you know. I'd be like, no, that's not me. And whenever I'd run away from that, I'd find that I, like a boomerang, I'd fly right back to it and just be, you know, working in my shadow, in the shadows. But there's something powerful about owning it, you know, about being like, yeah, this is, you know, this is something about me that's, that maybe I'm not so proud of, that maybe isn't the, you know, the most desirable trait that I want to put on my Instagram profile, but you know, learning to live with that, embrace that, and then repurpose that, like you say, into more meaningful ways that are in line with how you want to live your life. And that it's not easy. You know, I can't imagine that was an easy thing for you to do. But yeah, I just want to acknowledge that that's powerful stuff.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. And to your point, Mitch, the greatest power, like superpower that I have found, and the most liberating, freeing feeling is being truly vulnerable and unapologetic about it, right? Like Brene Brown has written great books about daring greatly and things like that. But from a man's perspective, right? And I believe we're in a renaissance period in this world in regards to manhood, that the minute I started saying I'm perfectly flawed and that everything's happened for me and not to me, like this is my path, this is the reason why I'm on this journey. Mind you, business is still going. I still got responsibilities as dad. I got responsibilities as a husband, even though my wife, I was on my third strike with her. The minute I did that was the minute that I broke the shackles and finally quit putting on the undue pressure for myself to live up to what I thought my parents wanted me to be, or society wanted me to be, or religion that I was raised in wanted me to be. Like a lot of people conform to what they think others want them to be and never are who they truly are or want to be. Right. So that's where that, you know, 5 years ago started to be the pivotal moment for me. And that's when Psalm got its birth. I never wanted to create it wasn't like I had a business plan, right? It wasn't. Men's groups have been around since Jesus walked there, since Sparta. And it was never that. What I had to do was create my own reality because of, you've heard my personality. And I looked around Little Rock, Central Arkansas, and just was disenfranchised with what I was seeing. There was no attention to results. And there was a lack of true vulnerability. Look, we're all coming from the same place, and you got to meet a man where he is in his life. And at that time, that's just what I saw. So I started mentoring one guy, and it became a grassroots movement. which in turn has helped save my marriage, helped 10X my business. I'm more connected now. Thank God I did it at that time, Mitch, because when we got the diagnosis of Landon being autistic in January, as a my wife and I would have been divorced. We wouldn't be able to handle it. You know, those are the things that you look back. The true measure of a man can't be measured, as they say.
Wow. Yeah. So I love that. Yeah. I think, you know, I think I found so much power in vulnerability as a man who for so many years was just like, you know, had the armor on. I was afraid to share anything real. And it really limited any relationship I was in. It really limited any connection that I would feel on a daily basis. It made me feel disconnected from myself and from the world, really. And I'm wondering, through School of Man, what do you guys do to cultivate that? Like, it's
good question.
It's tricky with dudes, right? Because it's not something that guys are driven or socially, conditioned to do, to be vulnerable with one another.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I had this conversation earlier today, and the one thing that we produce, like iPhone produces an iPhone, is the vulnerability aspect of it in true brotherhood. And you do that through shared suffering and shared adversity. And we do that with men from west to east. But you also, because I talked about the microwave mindset, like, you know, so many men come to us and want to microwave their results. You just can't do that. Like, we have a saying in Psalm, trust the process, trust the process. I mean, 5 years later and my marriage is better than it's ever been, but because we've been bred into our minds that, well, you graduate or there's a finish line, we start regressing. Our former self is our biggest adversary, and our future self is the hero we're chasing, right? So the base of a pyramid of vulnerability, the absence of trust of a lot of men's group is there's no shared connection or no shared adversity where I actually have to rely on Mitch to help me, right? And then once you are able to get that guy, that leader that has the ability to go there, right? It then gives permission to other like men to go there. And guys are coming to us or any other program like us because they are seeking for something you have. But the piece that always is missed is like the answer to the question of what's next. Like, I just finished a 12-week program with the local church this year called Better Man. And I'm looking around the table, and this is an observation. It's not me casting stones. You know, they're doing their best to foster an environment of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Some results. It's the same process, same formula. Let's talk about your past. Let's talk about your fatherhood. Let's talk about this, that, and the other. And that's important. But what I find with a lot of those programs and what I find, and that's important, is that they'll continue to do that because they don't have any other material. So a man honestly lives there. And then you walk in the next year, you see the same guy and nothing has changed in the one area in his life that needs to change, right? Yeah. And that's where Psalm has radically, you know, been impactful with men that get involved. But we push men so hard in a good, good, good way. And we do it through the integral theory model, physical, mental, emotional, intuitional, spiritual, that it produces the vulnerability, the trust. We do things in small tribes, right? In a class system with a proven curriculum that has a path that people follow that answers the question of what's next. And those who advance through our organization, you go through a 12-hour crucible, you go through a 24-hour crucible, you go through a 55-hour crucible. And the reason why I built that in along with the men that have created it, we've been doing it for 5 years, you know, is because you have to constantly be progressing. And our official insignia in Psalm is the Phoenix. Well, that's not earned until two and a half years after you've been in the organization, right? And we've seen your body of work. Doesn't mean you got to be a physical specimen. But when you're coming in for one thing, we're looking for you to to double down on that one thing. And it's our world has wanted us to buy into, like, you should have 17 different revenue streams. You should have this, that, and the other, when in reality, a man needs to be using the rifle approach with his life and not the shotgun approach.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you want to expand on that a little bit? The shotgun versus the rifle?
So shotgun. So like, think of Essentialism, right? That's a great book that's out there. Essentialism, you know, less but better mindset, right? Slowing down. Whereas when we go to the shotgun approach, when we're looking to achieve anything in our life, not everything is created equal. So therefore you're spreading your energy thin. We always talk about time management. Well, think about the energy, personal energy market, from Red Bull to Monster to Bangs to everything else out there. Energy is a man's greatest asset, because where your energy goes is where you grow. And if I'm using a shotgun approach, meaning like at the time I started SOM, Ash and I were done, right? I'd kicked everything else but the white line, et cetera. Well, I had, if you're the best in a room, you got to find a new room. If you're the best in the gym, you got to find a new gym. And so many men are scared to do that, because so many men are walking alone in today's world. I needed to surround myself with men that were better than me, better husbands, better fathers, better businessmen. And through that, you become the tide that lifts the ship, right? But I could only focus on one thing, that one thing at that time, because I was in such a basement with her emotionally. There was no emotional bank account left. There was no intimacy, no love. If I did all the great things and I wanted to say, hey, look at me. Yeah, that, if I was looking for that validation, it wasn't coming. So the only thing I could do was focus on getting myself healthy, knowing thyself. And that's what I'm talking about in a rifle approach. Your one thing, right? So not every, if a guy comes into me and he's looking for coaching, and he could be a CEO of a Fortune 100 company. And yeah, he's great financially. He looks on the outset, got the car, got the house, etc. But if his fitness is completely whacked and he's going to die on his desk, what do you think's more important? Yeah. At that point, we've got to get you to that place of health and vitality, to where you're getting younger and people are getting older, and start reevaluating some stuff. So that's what I mean by that. So a rifle, and I use that, we use it in SOM. So it's relevancy, illustrate why, friction, leadership and legacy, and then execute. So the friction part, when you are leaning into something that scares you, or feels weird, or feels awkward, that means that you're on to something at that point.
Oh, dude, I love that. Yeah, it's well, first of all, I love the rifle approach. I think it's so much truth in that. That like, when you're spreading your in this world, it can be so easy to be like, oh my God, so many things are fucked up in my life. I have to fix all of these different things at once, and it's first of all, not the case. And, you know, like you say, with the example of the CEO whose fitness is way out of whack, if just fixing that, where he's feeling better, he has more energy, he's, you know, he feels more vital, he's able to give more to his relationship, is so much more powerful than putting like 1/10 of that into fitness and 1/10 into the relationship and 1/10, you know?
Well, and that guy in particular, you don't need to tell him how to make money. He knows how to make money. He wants to know how to multiply his money while he's sleeping. Don't tell him how to run a company.
Right.
Maybe he needs that coach. Like, so let's say Elon Musk comes to Mitch. How is Mitch going to coach Elon Musk? And that's where your frame of mind should be, right? There is one thing that you need to lock in on once you get to know that man and that person, to where you can double down. Like, so Elon's worth $220 billion. That's a number I don't care about. Right. Like, I don't care that he invented Tesla and he's colonizing Mars. All I know is that when I walk in the door, I'm there to help Elon focus on one thing with the rifle. Right. And a lot of times for those types of guys, they're lonely at the top. And then when you go to this other end of the spectrum, and then you say, OK, there's this guy that might be just now getting started here. He's struggling. He's went through divorce, whatever the case might be, man. He could have these wounds on his heart. All right. So that's where we need to focus. We use fitness, because it's as old as time, to bring everybody together from east to west. SOM is a Monday through Sunday organization. Like, it's not a event-based organization with our own little meta universe, I guess, if you want to call it that. But yeah, so that's why we're always preaching the power of one thing. Guys are always coming to us for multiple things, but there's one that once we hit that nerve, we're gonna double down on it.
That's, yeah, I love that. Just start with one thing. Let's get back to, I want to ask about your relationship. So I know, you know, you've mentioned a few times on this show that It wasn't always at a good place that you were on your third strike. You're almost out. And, you know, I saw a, I think it was an Instagram post by you about dating your wife. And one of my buddies says the same thing, and he's got an amazing relationship with his wife. And so I'm curious what you mean by that. What do you mean by dating your wife? Mm-hmm. And how did you turn that thing 180? Because I think there's a lot of counterexamples where, you know, men were in bad places with their partners, and at that point, you know, it's just throw up the white flag. Let's split this thing up.
Yeah.
And go separate ways.
Man, this is a topic I'm passionate about. Just to be vulnerable on this piece of it too, like in the beginning of our marriage, I thought everything was built on sex, right?
Right.
And the rehearsal dinner the night before our wedding, I got blitzed. Walked into my wife's room, mm-hmm. midnight, 1 o'clock. I was chewing Adderall, blitz, trying to go get some play, sit on the bed, and I bounce off. You know, that's how I started off my wedding weekend. Yeah. Didn't go to sleep all night. Woke up, took more Adderall, got drunk, had the wedding. Because that's kind of how I was in the perceived how wedding should be.
Right.
We go to Costa Rica, and it was her time of the month. And this is in my book. This is something we talk about openly. This is how I started off my marriage. She wouldn't give me oral sex, so I left her there in the shower. Well, I didn't know at that time someone attempted to rape her back when she was 17 or 18.
Yeah.
I leave her in the shower, and I go to the bar and get blitz and start taking shots and swim in the pool, so on and so forth. So that's how my marriage started off. And then we learned that she was pregnant. Honestly, I don't know if we'd be together if Ava Madison wouldn't have came along. Mm-hmm. When we learned a month later she was pregnant, I was like, well, shit, okay, I'm going to stick this thing out. Now I've got a child, someone else that I'm responsible for. Mm-hmm. Ava Madison flatlines. I blow my Achilles twice, stint in the hospital, the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. To fast forward, I had to really reframe for me personally, and I can't speak for everybody. Like when I say date your wife, what I mean is pursue her, because it's really easy 10 years in, it's where we are, 11 years in, to be like, been there, done that. It gets boring. It's stale. Why don't, you know, we hold hands like we did when we were first married or dating or in a relationship. So when I say date, I mean pursue.
Right.
I mean woo. Win or over type of deal, because it did. It was really year seven of our marriage when things finally started to turn, you know, for the better. These past 12 weeks, again, full transparency, vulnerable, man. I had a conversation with her in January when stress was really high. When stress is really high in a relationship, if you don't communicate, and as a man, you have to go to that place of, all right, I'm going to reciprocate without expecting anything in return. Now, we have been built and wired since kids and boys to say, hey, what am I getting in return? Like, because that's how money works, right? Like, I give Mitch $100. What am I getting from a value perspective? What product are you selling me that I'm buying? And you bring that into your relationships, right? But over these past 12 weeks, our relationships have been tested again. With stress, and I pulled her into the closet, and I said, babe, I love you. And this is how far we've come. I love you, but right now I'm not in love with you. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard conversation for any man to have. Most men would go into porn, chronic masturbation, go drink or do whatever else, right? Because when we get bored, we do dumb stuff, Mitch. Men do dumb stuff. So when I talk about date your wife, I don't mean you can do the weekly date night, but those can be an honest waste of an hour if y'all aren't talking the real talk and you're just checking a box. Don't just check the box.
Right.
So for me, like even as of right now, I have to get back to dating Ashley, right? And that's just something as simple as holding her hand, being cognizant of that, being present of that, to falling back in love with her. And I am, you know, I'm again, I'm always in therapy mode. So I'm in therapy working through that. Where's that come from? Because that week we learned that Landon was autistic. The next day, our dog, we had to put down. The end of the week, I was doing power cleans in my garage, training for 24 hours of Merv. And dude, it just, I was about to erupt. So I literally put a box on my head and screamed in the box and threw the box off, walked upstairs, drop kicked pillows, screamed in the pillows, man. I'm a perfectly flawed dude. So, you know, at the end of the day, if I want to have more love and make more love and be more intimate and her fall in love with me and vice versa, and there be the spark, et cetera, that's up to me. Like, and it's just the little things when I say date your wife, that's important. And that post was the week before we found out Landon was autistic. And it was one of those things that we're like, there's no way. And he is the first thing they said. And it just broke her jaw. But yeah.
Man. Yeah. That's wow. Yeah. I appreciate your vulnerability on here. I really do. It's all right. That's amazing. I think what it came down to from what you're saying is that, well, there's a few things I wrote down here, but in terms of dating your wife, what it sounds like is like showing up with intention, like meaning yep. when you're being with her and just really like showing up, you know, not just showing up for that weekly date night and sitting there and like watching the game in the corner of your eye, but actually, you know, being present there with her, holding space, listening. And
it's challenging, man. It's challenging.
Man. Yeah.
It's hard, bro. It's like, this is easier for me. Yeah. Like this kind of conversation with another man than it is with my wife. Like, and that's just truth. Like, that's just my relationship. I can speak only from my lens.
Yeah.
And we talk about goals and dreams and kids, et cetera. And, you know, I'm a very much like 72-hour kind of guy, 48-hour kind of guy, get it out the way, move on.
Yeah.
Well, my wife, Ashley, she's depressed. She's struggling to get out of bed. And I'm just like, get the hell out of bed. Like, we don't do this like type of deal. So I have to, that's that energy I was talking about earlier. You know, and I'm the one that actively creates the wedge. Like, she'll want to sit up and talk in bed. Well, I'll just go to bed because I wake up at 4 a.m. every morning. Right. So, again, those are just things when I say date your wife, it always goes back to presence, self-awareness, intentional thinking versus conditional thinking, because so many of us men are conditional, meaning like, if these conditions are met, then I'm going to do it. If these conditions aren't met, then I'm not going to do it. And that could be as simple as I'm training for a marathon, but I'm only going to run on sunny days. Well, apparently you don't have a big enough why. Right. I'm going to win my wife's heart back only if these things happen. Whereas when you're an intentional rifle approach type of guy, come hell or high water, rain or shine, it doesn't matter. You are just looking to grab every inch you possibly can, regardless of what is thrown at you.
Right. Oh, dude. Yeah, I love that. It's like what it makes me think of is, you know, you kind of started the show talking about knowing yourself and how important that was. And it almost sounds like knowing your relationship and the dynamics and your partner, I suppose you could say, know yourself and know your partner is just as important in the context of the relationship, you know, with you knowing like when something happens, I'm a 72-hour guy, but she's going to feel it for a while. And knowing that like, okay, this is her process. She knows my process and we can coexist and, you know, have that awareness around each other.
Yeah, I agree, man.
I got my little
man popping in.
Oh, is that right? So, guest appearance. Right. We love it. Man, this has been awesome. I guess I want to ask one kind of final question, which usually turns into a bit of a bigger.
All right. So real quick, yeah. Mitch, let me let my boy Landon come over here and introduce.
Oh, let him in.
Come on over. So he got the underdog movie for us to watch with Kurt Warner. Oh. Yeah, I love that. I want to watch that with you, buddy. Yeah, me and you, man. Boys' night.
Boys' night.
I'm awkward.
I'm awkward. He called you awkward?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, you know, it just, it's the end of the day. So he's a, yeah, so Landon is autistic, ADHD, battles with some depression and anxiety. Labels will hurt you unless you convert them into power, right? And so, like, there are, we just started figuring all this stuff out. And he, you know what? We're blessed and unstoppable. Yeah. And what I mean by that is there are friends of ours that have children that are level three that are nonverbal. Landon is level one. It's more behavioral. And that's another thing, you know, for the listeners out there, like when you're going to fight how you train as a man, right? So when you slow down, if you've ever shot tactically or you've ever been in a fight, when you slow down and you take situational awareness into play, right? Like don't just walk into a restaurant and just go to your seat. The first thing I do is I take situational awareness and I see exactly what's all going into the restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with your life. Mm-hmm. Same thing with your life, man. Because when your heart rate goes up, when the fight, flight, freeze syndrome starts kicking in or mechanisms start kicking in, right? The cortisol starts hitting your bloodstream and your adrenal glands are pumping. Even with your family, if tensions are super high in your house, and that's what they've been in our house these past several months, behavioral with him, you have to be able to not match emotion with emotion. You have to be able to de-escalate because understanding that who you're dealing with or what you're dealing with, you know, there's an action, an equal and opposite reaction with whatever you put back into that equation. Now that's a, you know, a long thing to say, but you know, it's important for the things that I've learned these past few months with my little man that everybody knows that this is parallel to the world and emotions will kill you if you do not know how to regulate them. And that's another part of slowing down.
Ooh, dude. Yeah. Yeah, that's real stuff. Like I think learning to regulate your emotions, I found is so powerful, especially in relation with others, in that if someone's coming to me in a stressful state, the last thing they want is to be received by someone who's also getting amped up and is reactive to what they're hearing. They want to hear someone who can receive what they're telling them and be like, oh, you know, this isn't good. But we're gonna get through this. This is gonna be okay. You know, just that calming, regulated presence that maybe that loved one can't be in that moment. And that's, I love that you have the awareness to you know, to realize that and through these last couple months, which sounds like haven't been easy on you or your family.
Appreciate it, man. So you got a question though? You got another
question? I've got a question. So this is a question I like to ask all guests on the show. And it's, and I want to take it a step further for you because I know your program with School of Men is about building better men. So the question is, what does being a man mean to you? And how and what does it mean to become a better man?
Great questions, man. So what does it mean? What does being a man really mean to me? And I ponder on this a lot. I discuss it with the men in Psalm a lot. And if you are to become a 1% man in my book, right, or just a man of honor, that's a big honor is a big deal with me because I have been on the opposite side of honor. And, you know, you don't have to be the fastest runner. You don't have to jump the highest. All right. The first thing that a 1% man, a man of honor, just a real man in my book, is that he admits he's perfectly flawed. And we've talked about that. What it also means to be a man of me is, you said it earlier, Mitch, is showing up, even when you don't want to show up. Right. And That's where you build and forge the character you most desire. This world is constantly producing comfort. Mm-hmm. And you as a man have to be the man that you love to see staring back in the mirror. You are the man that your wife dreams about at night but gets to wake up to in the morning. You're the hero that your children need and the father they deserve you to be. You're a fierce and special breed of brother to your team. You can define team however you want. You know that when life throws you spears, you look at those spears as an opportunity to grow and help others with. You're not lighthearted as a man. You're lion-hearted. You're secure enough to show the world your flaws, but fierce enough to attack them head on. And when you make a mistake, you own it. You take extreme ownership and you suffer the consequences like a man. You have integrity in every aspect of your life, but the humility to not boast about it. You know who you are and you're in control of your life's journey. You are constantly conquering what we like to say your five mountains, your physical, your mental, your emotional, your intuitional, and your spiritual. And you're helping others do the same. You're a leader, whether it be one or many, you're called to lead. So many men wait for a title. And title is the lowest level of leadership. Just because I'm a dad doesn't mean I have authority over them. If I'm a dad that likes to drink booze all evening or I'm overweight, out of shape, don't take care of myself, what type of precedence am I? You know, they have to follow me because I'm paying the bills, but they don't. They don't. I don't have any influence once they get older, right? But I've also, as a man, learned to hold others lovingly accountable like a true leader would. Accountability is something we do really, really well in Psalm. But a lot of people shy away from accountability, men in particular, because their stuff isn't squared away. When you're not confident in yourself and you're not squared away, how am I supposed to tell Mitch to hold himself accountable? I want to tell you what you want to hear, not what you need to hear, right? Right. So a real man in my book tells you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. And last weekend, we had a big event called Rebirth 2.0. And one of our SEALs, Navy SEALs, who was here 20 years, and he's been involved in the program for 4 years, he said, go in that room. There's over 150 people here. That includes wives and kids, et cetera. And there were 11 men who earned our Phoenix. It takes, like I said, 2 years. And he said, go in there and shake the biggest dickhead's hand. And what he meant by that is it's easy to go say thank you to the huggers. It's the guys that truly care about you and tell you what you need to hear versus what you want to hear that pushed you beyond the brink or got you to the precipice of wanting to quit and then came back and said, you know what? This is where we are. This is where you need to go. Thank that guy because they're very few and far between. They're like unicorns out there. Same thing for women. You know, a man embraces freedom. I mean, that's something we all seek. That's nothing the government produces. We had a guy last weekend that was just got out of prison after 9 years.
Wow.
And he was embarrassed about that, which we don't care. Right. But it's like I told him, I said, Cody, I said, I'm looking at 80 dudes right now that every single one of them have been in prison. And he kind of looks at me and he says, what do you mean? And I said, brother, prison starts in between the ears. Prison, we imprison ourselves more than anybody. We let people strip our freedoms away from us. Dive into porn. So every man is seeking freedom. That's all what we have in common. We have shed blood over it. But, you know, another question or point to this is that, are you a man that's willing to move society forward? Like, are you a man that's willing to leave the world better than you found it? That's a man in my book when he filters it through that lens of saying, you know what? It's not all transactional. I am here to help others be better than they were yesterday. And I don't need the credits at the end of the movie.
Right.
I'm not going to lead with my resume. Like, this took a lot for me to honestly reach out, grab a publicist, be on a podcast. Because I'm one of those guys that, hey, man, I like to be behind the scenes and I tithe and I put my money on guys that are going to pan out. I know that can grow, that their family needs them.
Yeah.
But I was pushed and to do it. And I'm glad I'm doing it for that sense. But how do you become a better man or create a better man for that process? That's the second part of that question. And hopefully I answered the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So A better man is like, you know, the word warrior has been overused,
right?
We use the word warrior a lot. We use it from the battlefield in war. We use it to the football field or soccer field or the pitch, whatever, wherever you are. Warrior and becoming a better man is a path. It's pursuing self-mastery with every ounce of energy you have and never yielding to adversity. So as to create a better man, just like we say all the time, it's like we upgrade men like they upgrade their phones or they upgrade their golf grips, mm-hmm. right? You're going to have to be that guy that says, you know what? I really don't want to go do this, but take me through the fire. Mm-hmm. Take me through the fire. You know, when Kirk died at my feet, that's when I first saw, and he left two boys behind, his wife. People don't understand. It's like, why would you do that? Why would you do something that crazy? How selfish of you? No, 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 no. I saw a man live and not exist. Yeah. And, you know, when you get into that frame and you start filtering life of like, hey, man, this life right now, I will live and I will not exist. Because it's easy to die, Mitch. It's harder to live. And that's when you start unlocking chambers in your brain and in your mind and in your heart and in your soul. And you become at that point immortal. Mm-hmm. And you know, we have a toast all the time at all of our events, never be forgotten. Mm-hmm. So to create a better man, it always goes back to the process, but it goes back to that man. And it goes back to commitment, raising his hand, say, take me through the fire. I don't care if you're got three letters behind your name. I don't care if you're a superstar stud. Every man, that's a loaded question. Do you want to become a better man? Well, yeah, I do. You want me to show you how to do it? Yeah. Okay, so let's go down here, and I'm going to get you wet and sandy, and then I'm going to break you, and then I'm going to help you, and I'm going to teach you as long as you're open. I don't need to do that. You got to meet men where they are, right? Like, that's important, but a man has to be willing to volunteer himself to go through the fire.
And
not microwave his success. You can't do it. Just, I've never seen it done, and it'll never happen. The guys that try to do it, they always regress back to former self.
Right. Wow, man. What an answer. That was beautiful. I love
appreciate it.
Live, don't just exist. Awesome stuff. We're running out of time here. Where can our listeners go to connect with you, follow you, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah. And I appreciate, again, gratitude. Really appreciate everybody and you in particular. Go to schoolofman.live to get involved. Take the Battle Guide Challenge. It's a 7-day challenge to help you use the rifle approach. And then you can listen to our podcast, which I'd love to have you on, of course, and pick up our book, schoolofmanbook.com. I'm a big collaborator. I'm an abundance kind of guy, not a scarcity kind of guy. But schoolman.live is where you can start. Battle Guide is where you can start. Pick up the book. And then social at School of Man on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. And then we're not dancing quite yet on TikTok, but we're on TikTok. Sure. Getting that piece rolling. But yeah, get involved that way, guys and gals. And we are coming out with a lot of new programs, even for women. So we got a new program coming out called Strength and Sisterhood, SIS for short. So for those ladies out there that are looking for more raw and real discussion, we got you.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Thanks, brother. I appreciate what you're doing. Appreciate you.
Likewise.
Thanks for being on the show.
Likewise, Mitch. Can't thank you enough.